I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly Shape Up at the Barbershop, where the guys talk about the news and whatever's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a cut this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, media executive Nick Charles, and syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete. Hey, Jimmy, what's up?
Hey, yo, what's up, fellas? Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey, Jay, what's happening, man?
Yo, check this out, man. John McCain and Barack Obama showed and proved in the Potomac with Obama rocking Hillary's yacht. Something fierce, man. What happened? And you know what? What's interesting is Mitt Romney's come out to endorse McCain, man. Ruben, what's up with that?
What is up with that? It's getting really interesting on the presidential race. I personally don't think Romney's endorsement of McCain is going to do a lot of good because the anti-McCain vitriol on the right wing is just so strong that if anything, now those folks are likely to turn against Romney. They're not likely to rethink their thoughts about McCain. Now, on the Democratic side, it's getting even better because every single time that Hillary gets a beatdown, and she's gotten eight straight beatdowns in a row in eight primaries or caucuses that have gone to Obama, every time this happens, the Clinton camp brings out the long knives and the bad rhetoric, and they've been saying and doing all this vicious stuff about Obama. Most recently, Ed Rendell, the governor up in Pennsylvania and a Hillary Clinton backer, floated the idea that white folks won't vote for a black guy. Wow. And I just think this is nuts. This is the stuff that Democrats said that Republicans used to do, and now Democrats are doing it.
That's true.
Nick, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, my thing about it is that in terms of Republicans, this is John McCain's gold watch. He's not going to win the presidency in November. So this is his gold watch for all the years of service, for going to the Hanoi Hotel, Hanoi Hilton, and he gets a gold watch, he's going to get the nomination. Whether or not the conservatives are on board, whether or not Ann Coulter likes it, he's going to get it. I don't think he has a chance in November, either it's Hillary or Obama. On the Democratic side, I agree with Ruben. You know, I'm waiting for somebody to come out with the N-word in any minute now. It's getting really vicious. You can see her stump speeches in Wisconsin. You could hear it in the subtle rhetoric of Bill Clinton, that they are thoroughly discombobulated, thoroughly upset, and caught off guard. They really thought this was going to be a coronation. And now, not is he tied, he has surpassed her. And the long knives are turning into cleavers. And these folks are just going to start hacking.
But I wanted to ask Ruben a question, though, about the one of the sort of signs when a campaign is in trouble was when they start firing people.
Yeah.
And Clinton campaign, fired, maybe not the right word. Patty Solis Doyle, who was the campaign manager, the first Latina to run a national campaign, was replaced by Maggie Williams. And Ruben, I was just wondering, is this the kind of thing that people care about? Does anybody care about it? Or is that just inside baseball?
Latinos care about it. It's inside baseball for a lot of other folks, but Latinos care about it as follows. If you had an African-American in a high-profile position and the campaign had gone around and said that, you know, made a big deal out of that, and then one day you woke up and that person was gone, the response would be, okay, listen, you don't get any gold star for that. You don't get any diversity credit for that because that person's not there anymore. And a lot of Latinos up on the East Coast in particular are raising questions about what happened to Patty Solis Doyle. And here's why. Because she goes way back with Hillary Clinton, but anybody can see that Patty Solis Doyle didn't blow those elections. Those elections were blown by Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. They don't need a campaign manager.
True.
They need a new candidate.
Well, I don't know, though. Don't they have a right to have people run their campaign as they see fit? If you're not getting the results, somebody's got to take the fall. It's like firing the manager of a baseball team.
Well,
manager's got to go. That's what it is.
I think a lot of Latinos disagree with me, and they think that this is kind of a typical Clinton MO, use people and discard them when they're no longer useful.
Well, and for Democrats especially, I think for us what is most telling is if you look at both Hillary and Barack's acceptance speeches around the primaries and look at the audience behind them, behind Hillary is the old white establishment Democratic Party. Behind Barack is the new rainbow coalition, if you will, of this new generation, this new sort of youth progressive grassroots movement that is black, that is white, that is Christian, that is Muslim, that is Jewish, that is straight, that represents all of America. And I think that, you know, for many Democrats, they're really waking up to the fact that Hillary is just part of the establishment and she's just part of the political machine.
I do have to remind people that Arsalan's an Obama supporter. I just have to make sure everybody knows in case that wasn't really clear from what you just said. Go ahead, Nick.
I think what you have to be careful of is not to count out yet. You know, she's on the mat. She's at the count of six. She has four more counts to get up off the mat. And the thing about it, they're willing to rend the relationship that black folks have had with the Democratic Party for half a century to win this election by saying that there's a division between Latinos and blacks, now trying to pit Latinos against blacks. They're willing to do that to win this election. So God knows what they're willing to do between now and then. You know, I'm not supporting either one ostensibly, but the tactics of the Clintons are very, very brazen, and it'll get even more brazen as you get closer and closer to Texas, Ohio, and I don't even think Pennsylvania, because Texas and Ohio is where it's going to be the firewall.
I just want to point out, just in the spirit of fairness, that there are some people who think that the Obama people are meaner than the Clinton people.
Yeah,
well, I know. I'm just saying
some
people
paying attention.
Just in that they're saying more. You find more Obama people saying, "If she's the nominee, I'm not voting for her because I'm not digging the way they
ran
this campaign."
Well, it's hold your nose and go to the booth, like many conservatives are going to do with John McCain. You know, we sort of view Hillary in that same regard also, that obviously we want to see a change in administration, but we might hold our nose while going to the ballot box also.
Just one other thing I was wondering if I could run past you, as there was this really interesting debate over the superdelegates.
Yeah.
Right. Nick, you were saying taking it down to the wire and counting every vote. Well, this is an issue that is clearly going to go down to the wire. And the question then becomes what to do about the delegates from Michigan and Florida who are not supposed to be counted because the party decided that since they moved their primaries up their delegates shouldn't be seated. Sorry, that's not a superdelegate question. It's a delegate question as well as a superdelegate question. And you've had this interesting split in the civil rights community over this. I mean, Julian mm-hmm. Bond on the one hand saying this is another example of voters being disenfranchised, many of them minority voters. And then Al Sharpton saying, you know, the rules are the rules. You know, there are a lot of people who probably didn't vote because they didn't think their votes would count. So their votes are not being reflected, so it's not fair. I just was curious what folks think about that.
That's funny. Because
Al Sharpton want to play by the rules?
Well, the funny thing, you know, this is one of the few times between that I agree with Al Sharpton, that and my love of James Brown, is that, you know, this reminds me of the movie The Man, where James Earl Jones is the president. You know, he gets in there by accident, and Martin Balsam says to him when he's running, you know, you got through the back door. These folks are trying to come through the plumbing. And the fact of the matter is, this is what they're trying to do.
That's true.
Everybody had an opportunity in October to say these folks do not count. Everybody agreed they don't count.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, you're behind by delegates. They should count. And a phone call from Bill Clinton to Julian Bond under the cover of civil rights is this is what it is.
Sure.
Let's call it what it is.
Well, the superdelegates thing, just very quickly, because Michelle mentioned that, that feeds into this notion that a lot of people have that the Hillary camp will do anything, that nothing is beneath the Clintons. Okay, they will stoop as low as they need to stoop to steal this election from Barack Obama. For people who believe that narrative, they think superdelegates are the way that Hillary steals the election. I don't think so.
If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Ruben Navarrete, Nick Charles, Arsalan Iftikhar, and Jimmy Israel in the barbershop.
Speaking of sneaky tactics, your boy pitcher Roger Clemens and former trainer Brian McNamee answered in front of Congress this week to allegations of steroid use. Nick, Clemens was up there head-to-head with McNamee. I tell you what, neither one of them read credible to me. Who's lying?
Hold on a second. For folks who missed the hearings, you want to just hear a little bit of what they said? Okay, here it is.
Let me be clear. I have never taken steroids or HGH.
And then this is Brian McNamee. Okay, well, that was Roger Clemens.
Short and sweet.
Short and sweet. And here's Brian McNamee, who's his former trainer, who also testified at the same hearing, sitting a couple of seats away, not making eye contact.
I have no reason to lie and every reason not to. If I do lie, I will be prosecuted. I was never promised any special treatment or consideration for fingering star players. I was never coerced to provide information against anyone. All that I was ever told to was to tell the truth to the best of my ability. And that is what I have done. I told the investigators that I injected three people, two of whom I know confirmed my account. The third is sitting at this table.
I watched a theater yesterday, and my thing is this. I'm with Representative Elijah Cummings of Maryland. Andy Pettit is the person I believe. And if Andy Pettit, who was not there yesterday, has a deposition that says Roger Clemens said to him that I use HDH, and Roger Clemens is saying Andy Pettit is a stand-up guy, then you're saying a guy who's a stand-up guy, now you're saying he misremembered?
Yeah.
The sad fact is, whatever he used or didn't use, the court of public opinion, people don't believe him. And he's trying to salvage a reputation and a Hall of Fame nomination. And the happiest person right now in America is Barry Bonds because he's not on
trial. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and another.
But you know what, Nick? You know what? You make that point. But McNamee, I mean, he's not exactly the most credible cat in the crew, man. I mean, he's on record lying, too, and deceiving in some of his testimony. So
I don't know, man.
To me, it's kind of like neither one of them have any real motivation to tell the truth.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The both of them, he's a rat and a snitch, and Clemens is trying to protect an image. That's why it's a wash. That's why I believe Pettit. And more importantly, if he admits that this guy was up in his bedroom with his wife getting injected, what else wouldn't he do? You know, he doesn't deny that, you know, McNamee injected his wife. And he said, I didn't know. Come on, you tell me your wife is going to have some guy up in a room injecting her with some foreign substance and you don't know?
Well, and keep in mind.
Right. that whole scenario is
Yeah, that's whole,
up.
You know, it's kind of whack there.
Yo, A-Train.
Well, I agree with Nick completely. And let's remember, this is a congressional hearing here. And so basically, these guys have so much invested. They basically have to stick with whatever stories they've said from the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I think that McNamee had a lot more to lose. He had nothing to gain by lying. I think Clemens just basically, you know, is towing his party line that he's done from the beginning. And he's going to be asterisked like Barry Bonds for the rest of his career.
There's a way out of this mess. I was trying to figure out all week, how could it be that both these guys are telling the truth, and now I figured it out. In an ode to Bill Clinton, it all depends on the meaning of the word steroid.
Well, you know what? Speaking
it's
of
sad,
listening,
though, isn't it, though?
Yeah,
I got to tell
it
you, it's sad.
It
I just hate watching this stuff. I hate having these guys.
Why do you think it's sad, Michelle?
I think it's that people invest so much in careers in athletics. They give up so much. They start, they gain a lot when they get to the pros, but they start at such a young age. They shut out pretty much everything else but athletics to build to that point, and then you see it slipping away. I'm not justifying it, but you know, you see the age at which, you know, these kids start, you know, doing the sports. They get coaching, you know, when they're 6 years old and, you know, whatever. And it just seems like we invest so much in sports, and then we build these people up, and then they screw
that
up, and
problem.
We bring them down. And that's all.
That
that's all I have to say.
No,
you know,
the second part of
it.
What you said is right. That's the problem. We invest too much in these people,
right.
And they have every reason to protect it, because who wants to get off that mountaintop? Who wants to move from first class into coach? You know, who wants to be the one to have to actually stand in line to go to the best restaurant? They want to be able to just walk right through the door and to give all that up. And you know, sure, you know, we've got folks out there, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan, laying their lives on the line. That's a really big deal. And in contrast, this isn't. But it just you see these guys, many of them who are not affluent, and everything they have comes from sports. You can see why they don't want to give it up, guys and women. That's all I wanted
to say. And also, you know, when we had Congressman Keith Ellison on a few weeks ago, he said that, you know, my kids are athletes. And what sort of message is this sending to the kids of America in terms of, you know, people who have these athletic aspirations as to, you know, what is okay and what isn't okay to do? And so for that, in terms of our sort of societal discourse, I think that, you know, it did play a public service.
In more serious news, now this is serious, bro. I guess Beyonce started a cat fight by not giving Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul, her props. And there's probably no quicker way without taking away her plate to get her angry. Yo,
do you guys, I don't know if everybody saw the moment because, you know, everybody wasn't watching, but just in case, here's a little bit. It was a longer performance, but it was like this. Here, we'll just play it.
But there is one legend who has the essence of all of these things. The glamour, the soul, the passion, the strength, the talent. Ladies and gentlemen, stand on your feet and give it up for the queen.
Yeah,
she was talking about Tina Turner. That's what's up with that.
That is just, you know, Beyonce could probably run away from Aretha, but if Aretha catches her with a headlock, it'll take all of Jay-Z's posse to pry her loose.
So, for real, man. She can put mustard on a bun and put Beyonce in it and eat her for lunch.
You know? You got to give Aretha some respect. Bum, bum, bum.
No, but you know, isn't this kind of divas being divas here? I mean,
sure.
You know, at the end of the day, I think a compelling argument could be made for Tina Turner. I mean,
come on, Aslan, please.
He's right.
No, he's not.
Yeah.
No, he's not.
A compelling argument.
Oh, go ahead.
Compelling.
A-Train, make that argument.
Make it out. Let me hear it.
What's love got to do with it? That's all. I mean,
Aretha's old school.
Tina, you know, helped redefine the 80s, in my opinion.
Well, actually, I was thinking a little more along the lines that, you know, Tina Turner, with Ike Turner, she was one of the architects of what we understand to be rock and roll. And for a long time, she was called the queen of rock and roll. And not just that, it could have been kind of a not a slip, but kind of like a weird slip, because you guys know that in Pink Floyd, Was it Pink Floyd or was it? No, it was the Who's play, I think. Tommy, she played the Acid Queen. So right, I mean, it could have been some kind of allusion to that. So, but no, in terms of her stuff in the 80s, I don't know if Tina did anything of note, you know, beyond Thunderdome, you know, to qualify as queen of much, you know. But I mean, Aretha is undisputed. I think what needs to happen here is maybe there needs to be like a diva battle, like Tina Turner, you know, Aretha Franklin, Beyonce, and you know, Aretha needs to blow them up, both off the stage, and show them why she gets R-E-S-P-E-C-T. That's what's up. I'm that dude. And I thoroughly approve that message. And with that, it's a wrap. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming to the shop. And I have to kick it back to the lady of the house.
That's right. Who's the queen up in here?
We know you.
I see. That's what I'm talking
about. The double M, baby. The double M.
That's what I'm talking about. Ruben Navarrete writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. He joined us from his office in San Diego. Arsalan Iftikhar is a contributing editor for Islamica magazine and a civil rights attorney. He joined us from our studios here in Washington. Nick Charles is the vice president of digital content at BET.com. He joined us from our bureau in New York. Jimmy Israel is a freelance writer and a blogger for TheRoot.com. He joined us from WFSU in Tallahassee, Florida. You can find links to all of our barbershop guests at our website, npr.org/tellmemore. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you, Michelle.
Yep, yep.
I think I should mention that a couple of us mispronounced the name of Roger Clemens' trainer. It's Brian McNamee. Sorry for that error.